Reading this morning from the 4th of Nehemiah, Nehemiah chapter 4. I felt drawn by God to preach on the book of Nehemiah as we approach our anniversary. It's all about building up the walls of the holy city. Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 1. But it so happened, when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, Are these feeble Jews, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, Whatever they build, if even a fox goes up on it, you will break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity, and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders. So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. Then Judah said, The strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall. And our adversaries said, They will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to stop. And so it was, when the Jews who dwelt near them came, that they told us 10 times, From whatever place you turn, they will be upon you. Therefore I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall, at the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us, and that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, every one to his work. So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, and more armor, and the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction, and with the other held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. Then I said to the nobles, the rulers, and the rest of the people, The work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. So we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from daybreak until the stars appeared. At the same time, I also said to the people, Let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day. So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. Amen. I pray that God will use this portion of scripture to encourage us in our own day and our own time. Let's sing together one more time, 380, a simple hymn, 380. Nehemiah chapter 4. Many of you will be familiar with the context of the book, but just in case, the reminder is that Jerusalem is a vulnerable city. It has no wall. It is vulnerable to attack, and it has many people outside who are willing to attack it. And the book of Nehemiah is a wonderful book. It's Nehemiah's, almost Nehemiah's diary about how he helped manage the rebuilding of the walls of the holy town. And so we come to verse 1. It says, "But it so happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant, and he mocked the Jews." Sanballat is one of the leaders of Samaria. He's one of the enemies of the Jews. He does not want Jerusalem to be rebuilt. He likes it being weak. He likes it being plundered. It makes him more powerful, and perhaps there is an enmity between him and the Jews. Elsewhere, we're told that they were deeply disturbed by the rebuilding and that they mocked the rebuilding. But the mockery has turned now to fury. Who does that remind me of? Well, 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 8 says, "Be sober-minded and watch. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about as a roaring lion, seeking whom to devour." The devil does not want a church to be built up. The devil does not want an individual Christian to be built up, to become stronger, to become powerful, to become useful to the master. And when he sees such things happening, he prowls around roaring with fury. And we're told of Sanballat, he spoke before his brethren. That implies there are several of them and that they are powerful. It goes on to describe the army of Samaria. Not only are these people opposed to the Jewish rebuilding of the walls, but they are armed. They are trained. They are a trained army. From a human point of view, Nehemiah's calling, Nehemiah's task is doomed to failure. He's surrounded by enemies and they are armed and they are angry. Of course, as the Samaritan governor, he does have a military force sanctioned by the Persian king. So he has an enemy, the enemy is angry, and the enemy is armed. Now, there's always a danger when you're preaching on a text like this that you over-spiritualize it as a preacher. At the end of the day, this is a historical account of something that actually happened. Nevertheless, I believe that there are parallels we can see in this chapter. It isn't simply a book and a chapter telling us what to do if the walls of the town in which we live, Barnoswick, are knocked down. There's far more to it There are spiritual lessons, I believe, that we can draw from. And the fact remains that we as believers, we have enemies. Our enemies are not other human beings, members of other religions or people who don't believe. Paul says our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. We too, like Nehemiah, have armed and furious enemies. And then they ask themselves, what are these feeble Jews doing? And from one point of view, that question was spot on. The Jews are feeble. There's only a few of them. They haven't got a great deal of money. They haven't a great deal of time. And they're surrounded by enemies. They are feeble. And yet, the strength of these Jewish workers and the strength of we today lies not in our wealth, nor in the extent of our knowledge or the strength of our bodies. Our strength lies in the strength of our God. You show me a Christian who is physically feeble, and I'll show you someone who makes Satan tremble. Those who are weak in the flesh, who trust in their gods, are powerful. He goes on to ask a number of questions. He says, will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifice? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heap of rubbish, stones that are burned? At this point in the text, I can see the cue for canned laughter coming from the army of Samaria. Of course they won't. Of course they won't. These stones which have been burned, they're weak. They won't rebuild it in a day. These feeble Jews will not accomplish that which they have set out to do. And then Sanballat is joined by another enemy, a more subtle enemy. We come across him later on in the book. He even has a holy name. Now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, whatever they build, if even a fox goes upon it, he will break down their stone wall. Tobiah fancies himself as a comedian. His name means Jehovah is good. Jehovah is good. But Tobiah was a far more tricky enemy than Sanballat. Later on, it's revealed in the book, he's quite good mates with the Jewish high priest. He's married into noble Jewish families. He even gets himself an apartment in the temple. Paul warns us against people who have a form of godliness but deny the power thereof. There are two enemies here named, Sanballat and Tobiah. And both of them were opposed to what God wanted. Remember, friends, an enemy might dress like an angel of light. It's interesting, though, in verse 4, Nehemiah, who is writing this, breaks off. So we have a scene in the Samaritan headquarters where the Jews are being mocked and ridiculed. What does Nehemiah do? He turns to God in prayer. He turns to God in prayer. He says, hear, O our God, for we are despised. And he asks for the very things that they are wanting to fall on the Jews to fall on them. Turn their reproach on their own heads. Give them as plunder to a land of captivity. That's what had happened to the Jews, which had resulted in Jerusalem being unwalled. Do not cover their iniquity. Do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they provoked you to anger before the builders. Of course, Nehemiah is asking that because God does blot out sin. He does cover iniquity. But these people are opposed to God. They're opposed to God's people. They're opposed to God's plan. So even while he's writing this account, he breaks out in prayer. There are some wonderful theological prayers recorded in the Bible. Nehemiah's prayers are often very short and very quick and very straight to the point. And God hears those prayers. That prayer shot up to heaven before that difficult situation is heard. And God responds accordingly. Nehemiah is apparently ignoring these enemies. He does his talking to God. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. The enemies might hold swords and bows and spears, but it's the Lord that Nehemiah appeals to. I must admit, I don't have enemies, I don't think. I don't think there are people out there who want to kill me. If I have, they haven't made themselves known to me so far. I'm sure they will extend that courtesy if they do exist. But I'm sure there are people out there that don't want this chapel to prosper. I'm sure there are people out there who think we're all balmy for spending an hour in church when we could be in bed talking to someone we cannot see. The message of Nehemiah is don't allow yourself to become discouraged. The enemy looks great and powerful, and they use mockery, but don't be discouraged. Hear, O our God, is what Nehemiah prays. And in verse 6 he says, so we built the wall. That's a really, really important set of words. Because he's ignoring the enemy. They don't want him to build it. But in verse 6 it says, so we built the wall. They continued regardless. Sometimes when you're working for God and you're doing something for him, you will be discouraged. And at first you'll think, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing it. Unfortunately, it's the lot of the Christian in this life that discouragement comes from all manner of direction. But we press on regardless. And Nehemiah continues building these walls. The entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. So the wall now has been completed, but it's not much of a wall because it's too low. If your wall is, you know, only up to shoulder height or head height, somebody will soon climb over it and your enemies are broken in. So it's complete, but it's not ready. But look at one of the explanations given. For the people had a mind to work. Not just Nehemiah. It wasn't just Nehemiah who had a mind to work. It was the whole people. The whole people rallied round and wanted to build up the walls. Yes, it's more of an obstacle than a wall, but it's more than it was. Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry. Before they were angry, now they're very angry. And Nehemiah goes on to list all the different peoples involved. There's a whole alliance out there being formed against the people of God. All of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. They've even roped in the Philistines, that old enemy. Yeah, they're throwing in their lot. Yeah, we'll do our bit to attack the Jews. We were good at it in the past. Why change course now? The progress of these walls are so rapid that the enemy is no longer content to mock and discourage, but now they're thinking of an actual physical attack. And of course, that's quite risky. They are all part of the Persian Empire. The Persian king in Persepolis, or Susa, does not want his own governors to be warring against each other. And so for one governor to attack another governor is actually a rather serious crime. But the hatred towards Jerusalem and the Jews is so great, they're even prepared to risk the wrath of the great king. In verse 9, we get Nehemiah's response yet again. Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our gods. Twice now, Nehemiah has prayed to God. Why? Because twice he's been discouraged. That hymn we sing so often, take it to the Lord in prayer, take it to the Lord in prayer, take it to the Lord in prayer. We sing it so often. Yet how often do we see prayer as a last resort? Not for Nehemiah. He prays, he prays, he prays, he prays. We made our prayer to our God, not just any old God, to our God. The great joy of the believer is that you can call God yours. He calls you his. You are adopted into the family. You're not praying to someone you don't know. You're praying to your God. And it said, and because of them, we set a watch against them day and night. Do you think the second part of verse 9 contradicts the first? They prayed to God for help, and yet Nehemiah still set a watch against them. Was that a lack of faith? Does that indicate that Nehemiah is hedging his bets? So I will pray about this problem, but I'll also do something about it myself. I think not. I think it was Cromwell who told his godly soldiers to trust in God, but still keep your powder dry. Yes, pray. When you have a difficulty, pray to God. But don't idly sit back and expect God to do everything for you when he has placed the power, the means in your hands to also effect the fulfilling of that prayer. Setting a watch against an enemy without prayer would have failed. Because of them, we set a watch against them. A watch, of course, I'm sure you've worked it out, is a watchman, a guard, a lookout, security. So some of the people are building and others are playing the lookout. I'm sure that's a ministry for today as well. Playing the watchman, watching out for each other. Then Judah said, Judah, the Jewish nation. Then Judah said, the strength of the laborers is failing. And there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall. Sometimes we forget that building a wall is really, really hard work. In 1995, our church youth group went out to a chateau in France because it was a place by which people would train evangelists to work in France and, you know, French speakers. This chateau had been bought by a Christian organization to train people to share the Christian faith. The difficulty is it had a moat, which is lovely, and it had a bridge across the moat, but the local fire department had said, for the number of people living in that chateau, you need a bigger bridge, and therefore we are closing this building down. You cannot use it. And so an appeal went out for teams to go out and build bridges. And we said, yeah, we'll do it. It's building a bridge. It can't be that hard. We were there a week, and there were various teams from all over Britain going over. Let me tell you, I have never worked so hard in all my life, mixing concrete and with wheelbarrows. It was really, really hard. And I was doing it for a week. And let me tell you, I was glad when that week was over. These people are building a huge wall. And it's not just to satisfy the health and safety demands of the local fire department. It's because they're about to be attacked. No wonder the strength of the labourers is failing. And another reason is supplied as well. There's lots of rubbish. Literally, it's too much dust. Now, it might mean because it's a dusty building site, there's dust everywhere, you can't see where you're going. But I think it's because of the debris that was left You know, when the Babylonians knocked down the walls of Jerusalem, they didn't carry the stone away, and neither did they pile it up into nice, neat little sections. They just left it there. The stones and boulders and rubbish all over the place, a bit of burnt wood, a bit of metal, probably an odd skull. And when you're trying to build something, but there's a whole load of debris in the way, it hinders the work. So your strength is failing because you're expending your energy, stepping over the boulders and the rubbish, and there's dust in your eyes, and you're covered in dust, it's in your hair. And Nehemiah must be thinking, what now? I've got enemies over there about to attack me. And now the people say they haven't the strength, and there's too much rubbish, and poor Nehemiah. I know I'm only the pastor of a small church. But let me tell you, there's problems on every side. And I'm sure the bigger the church, the bigger the problems. And I have come to the conclusion that anyone who pastors a church almost certainly is doing it because God has called them. I cannot think of any other reason why you would possibly want to do it. And I say that with all due respect. Nehemiah must be thinking, what am I meant to do now? Problems within, problems without. Too much dust, we have not enough strength. Mockery over there. The army of Samaria rattling its sabres. The difficulty, of course, is that the remains of the past were hindering the construction of the present. May not the stones of yesteryear, the constructions of the past, hinder what we are doing now. In verse 11, our adversary said, they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease. Well, there's no mockery there. It's straight to the point. Some have suggested this. They will neither know nor see anything. Might be something to do with all the dust. I don't know. And so it was, when the Jews who dwelt near them came, they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, they will be upon us. Well, thank you very much. So there are Jews who are living in Samaria, who are coming up to Nehemiah and saying, by the way, Nehemiah, wherever you turn, they're going to come and kill you. Some Christians have the ministry of encouragement. Some don't. They don't seem to offer a solution, but they are persistent. 10 times they tell Nehemiah, you're about to be killed. Thank you very much. Nevertheless, he does act upon that information. Perhaps it does come from God. Therefore what? Because of the information. These Jews may have been doing him a service after all. Therefore, I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings. In other words, the weakest areas, he allocates men. He set the people according to their families with swords, spears, bows. I looked and arose and said to the nobles, the leaders and the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. How many times do we hear that phrase in the Bible? Do not be afraid. And then he tells them why they shouldn't be afraid. It's not because, well, the wall's nearly built, so when they come and kill you, they'll at least have to clamber over a wall. He says, remember the Lord. Sometimes when we're discouraged, we're thinking about all our problems and all this and all that and all the other, and some things are best forgetting. But the Lord is always worth remembering. Remember the Lord. Why? Because he is great and awesome. He's not like any other god. A piece of wood or a block of stone. He is great and he is awesome. Fight for your brethren. your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses. Nehemiah positioned them in families so that they weren't just fighting for Nehemiah, they were fighting for each other. He's improved upon the previous tactic. Before, he set watchmen. Now he sets soldiers. We've got the ministry of the watchman. We have the ministry of the builder. We have the ministry of the soldier. And whatever you think about actual warfare, the Bible is clear that as a Christian, you are one of the Lord's soldiers. And let me tell you what that doesn't mean. It doesn't mean you take up actual weapons and hurt people. It doesn't mean you drive lorries into crowds of people. It doesn't mean you blow yourself up. We do not wrestle against human beings. We wrestle against things which are not flesh and blood. But you are a soldier. And the soldiers are minding the gaps. There's no point putting your soldiers where the wall is strong. That part of the wall can probably take care of itself. No, you put your soldiers where the wall is weak. I once heard someone preaching on the call to ministry. And let me tell you, ministry could be cleaning toilets. Ministry could be prayer. Ministry can be anything. It's not just preaching. He said, the need is the call. If there's a gap in the wall, go to it. If the wall's rather low over there, that's where you go. Don't go to the strong bit. Go to where you're needed. Go to where you're useful. Nehemiah is absolutely clear. They might have more swords, bows and spears, but it's the Lord that they have to remember. David said to Goliath in 1 Samuel 17, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled." One teenage lad with God on his side will defeat the giant. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half my servants worked at construction while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows and wore the army. Evidently, the enemy postponed their attack, called it off because they knew they would not be acting in surprise. They were waiting for them. And so they called it off. And it says the Jews then returned to the wall, not to celebrate, to keep on working. To keep on working. And then we have an interesting development of labour. Half my servants worked at construction, the other half held the weapons. Some build, some guard. Some preach, some pray. Some make a mess, others clean. Here's a question for you. What's your ministry? Because in the book of Nehemiah, everybody has one. What is it you do? Chapter 5, some of the nobles don't do anything. Let me assure you, there was nothing noble about them. It says the leaders were behind all the house of Judah. That's what leaders should be doing. They lead, they go in front, but when the work's going on, they're behind them. Not holding the whip or the cat of nine tails, but to encourage them, to show them. Those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction and with the other they held a weapon. The sword and the trowel. Is that not a picture of each and every one of us? We're called to build up, but we're also called to fight. We're called to construct, but we're also called to defend. Having a ministry doesn't mean you can only ever do one thing. Oh, I don't do that. That's not my ministry. I've got the ministry of discernment, so I don't help clean the church. Oh, okay, no problem. Well, the sword and the trowel, that's a picture of every believer. We're soldiers that build and we're builders that fight. Then I said to the nobles, the rulers and the rest of the people, the work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there, our God will fight for us. You imagine Jerusalem is quite a large area. It can be approached from any direction. And the army is split up. If you're a general commanding an army, by dividing your troops, you might be able to take your enemy by surprise, but you're also weakening your troops because there's fewer of them. And Nehemiah here develops a system whereby all the people rally together. They might rally together, but it's God who does the fighting. Oh, but God does the fighting. We don't need to rally. God will look after us. No. We fight, but God wins the battle. What if another attack is coming? The people are called to be perpetually diligent and watchful. Oh, the attack's over. You can relax now. No, no, no. You keep being watchful. You keep on working. You keep on building. You keep on going. Maybe in the past, you went through a particularly difficult time in your faith and you overcame it. Praise God. Keep being watchful. Keep being watchful, because the enemy keeps on trying. In the last few verses it says, so we labored in the work, and half of the men held spears from daybreak until the stars appeared. At the same time, I also said to the people, let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day. Evidently, they're leaving Jerusalem for the comfort of their own homes. But Nehemiah says, no, stay here. Work and guard. Guard and work. So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men on the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. I know the chapters were added later on. It's a bit of a strange note with which to close, isn't it? They didn't take off their clothes except to wash. Well, it's good to know that they did wash. But the point that he's making here is that they keep on their work clothes. Why? Because they're workers. They don't take them off and put on a nice luxury nightgown. Because they're workers. They're even working at night. They're guarding by night and working during the day. And therefore, friends, I say to you, as a Christian, you're called to work, to do, to guard, to build. Not just on a Sunday, not just during the day, but even in the evening. These people sacrifice their comfortable beds that the work might progress. I pray God will speak to us through that word.